Hi, I am Mari, and I'm an alcoholic, otherwise known as Mari, alcohólica, and I am very nervous about sharing today, so I hope that I can really deliver the message. I'm going to just share a little bit about how I qualified to be in these rooms. My first drink was at about age 13. My friends and I walked into a 7-Eleven and either stole or somebody had already stolen a bottle of vodka and several boxes of orange juice. And as we walked to middle school, we filled up the orange juice with half vodka and half orange juice and drank it. And that was literally my first time. I was so drunk, I was falling out of my chair. And that was the best and funnest time I'd ever had in my life. I was a very angry kid because I had a mentally ill father where I got to live with a lot of violence because of his mental illness. And I didn't know how angry I was. I had been a straight-A kid who just tried to please everybody and be really good. And that hadn't turned out very well because I was still living a life that wasn't getting better. And as soon as I got that first drink in me, things were better. I didn't give a blank about what was happening at home. And that was wonderful. And so I wanted to do that as much as possible. And my straight A's went to straight F's. And that was the beginning of my drinking career. And so at that age, I just continued to drink. Eventually, I learned that I was a kid who might be able to go to college and that I should take some academic classes. A counselor pulled me aside and let me know those things and said, we're going to put you in these challenging classes and we're going to change your path. And they did. It was great. I was really motivated to go to school and to get good grades. And so I stopped drinking Monday through Friday and only drank on Friday night, Saturday night, and Sunday. And I was still drinking until I was not remembering things. And that was my high school. And then I went to college. And one of my clear memories of drinking as a freshman at UCLA is waking up in a bed that was wet. Yep. Fun in the streets and wetting the sheets. That was all exciting times. And I thought that was really fun. And I didn't see anything wrong with it. I thought everyone else drank like I drank. But I was too drunk to know how they drank. And that continued into graduate school. And then at some point, I realized that I liked how I felt when I ran and when I was in nature. And I think I had my own spiritual awakening. So I stopped drinking as much and I started running a lot and became a long distance runner and a triathlete. And that separated me from my disease. I kind of took a vacation from alcohol because I felt so good doing these athletic things. And then I think I did those things alcoholically. So in like 3 hours of working out a day and running 18 miles a day and crazy things like that. But it was fantastic in terms of my sobriety. And then I became a mother and a wife. And as a pregnant mama, I didn't drink. As a nursing mama, I didn't drink. And as soon as my kids were weaned, I started drinking. And it was slowly a progression back to the kind of drinking that I used to do. Only I wasn't doing it in the clubs or in the parties. I was doing it at home and passing out on the couch in this very lonely way. They got nobody's attention. There were no DUIs. There was no fighting and screaming. There was nothing exciting that made me look like an alcoholic except that I felt very dead and very sad. And I didn't want to parent my kids that way, but that's how I was parenting. And I remember clearly seeing myself basically blacked out sitting on the edge of my child's bed as I had tucked her in and she was looking at me in fear, wondering why mommy wasn't responding. And I realized, like, I came back from the blackout and I don't know how long I'd been sitting there. I realized something was really wrong. And so I spent the next couple of years trying to slow down my drinking. So I'd take a 1 week vacation and think I was winning the battle, then a 2 week vacation and then a 30-day vacation from alcohol and a 60 and a 90. And I was like, yeah, I can do 90 days, right? But always, as soon as I picked up, I was drinking until I was blacking out. very boring, very non-interesting story. So you could use all of that to say, I'm not really an alcoholic. I'm just quietly drinking at home. I'm not getting DUIs. I'm not getting into crazy fights like my grandfather and my brother and my brother and my aunt and my aunt. They're all the real alcoholics, but not me. So that was my thinking, even up to the point where I was waking up in the morning and telling my husband and my kids, I'm not going to drink today, no matter what I say, don't let me have any wine. And then at night saying, that was morning mommy, and this is nighttime mommy, and nighttime mommy really wants a drink. So I'm going to have one tonight. And then it would turn into a bottle, and then it would turn into two bottles. And I remember then sitting at my kitchen table with two empty bottles of wine, having done that again, and telling myself, I need help. I don't know what to do. And just having a conversation with God where I said, please help me. I need help. I can't do this by myself. And I wouldn't have necessarily called that prayer. Prayer was the thing I used to do when I went to Catholic school or church, and we did the prayers that I learned in that faith. Or prayer was what I said when someone I loved was about to die, and I asked God, please don't let them die. But that was my first prayer, and I did ask. And I couldn't find any other answer except to then go into Google and say, how do I stop drinking? And what came up was AA. And I'm not an alcoholic, right? So I can't go to AA, but I did Google an AA podcast called the North Oakland Double Speaker Meeting. And I started listening to that. I subscribed to it and I was like addicted. I would drive to work listening to it. I would drive home listening to it. I would do everything that I could possibly do in my house listening to it. I was watering the garden, vacuuming, putting kids to bed even, listening to it. And I just kept listening to all these people who had completely much more exciting stories than me. And they were like real alcoholics. But in every single story, I heard me. I heard parts of my story. I heard how they wanted to stop and they couldn't. And how they could take vacations, but they'd always come back to it. And it was something that they just couldn't manage. And I never once heard a Latina immigrant kid who worked really hard and put herself through college and put herself through grad school and was a good breastfeeding mother and a triathlete who hadn't had any DUIs, right? I never heard my exact story, but I heard so many similarities that I just was driving to work one day, and it was really clear to me, I'm an alcoholic, and I need to start going to meetings. So that day, I called into work, and I said, I'm not going to come in this morning. I'll be there for the afternoon. And there's an app which has a little chair picture on it, and it's the AA app, and it tells you where all the meetings are. And I searched, and the first meeting that came up was a women's meeting in Santa Rosa, California, at 10:30 in the morning. And that was the meeting that I went to. And it was a meeting that had almost died. The week before, there had only been two women there. And so this week, there were four women who were trying to revive it. And one of them was smiling and walking across the courtyard. It was in a church. She smiled so sweetly. I thought she couldn't possibly be an alcoholic. She looks too healthy and happy, and she's just got this beautiful light all around her. And of course, I walked into the meeting, and she was chairing the meeting. And they embraced me, and they said, well, whatever the format was going to be, we have a newcomer, so we're going to start reading out of the 12 and 12. And 6 weeks after that, I had a sponsor, because the thing I learned from listening to this podcast is that if you want to do this program, you need to work the steps, you need a sponsor, you need a service commitment, you need to stay in the middle of the pack, not on the edges. And so that's what I did. It's 13 months later. The day before yesterday, achieved my 13th month of sobriety. I have no desire to drink, and I have total faith that if I keep doing this 24 hours a day, I'm done with alcohol. I'm so grateful for this program. If you want to stop drinking, you're in the right place. Keep coming back.
So hi, my name is Indike. I'm an addict and an alcoholic. It's really good to be here tonight. It's really interesting that I'm sharing tonight, because today I was practically just reflecting on my entire life. So I'm kind of going to go out of order here, but a little bit about just my life right now is I just started a doctorate program. I'm going back to school to become a chiropractor, and it's been 2 years in the making. In 2018, October 2018, I was supposed to start chiropractic school, but I decided that if I'm going to spend the time and the money doing something that I feel like I'm meant to do, I want to be sober for it. And that was essentially my motivation, amongst other experiences related and revolving around chiropractic. And I'm so grateful for that. You know, it took me going to rehab, and I currently live in a sober living environment, but all of those experiences have just gotten me to where I am today. So this morning, I went to go to a chiropractor. One of my professors offered to provide services, so I took him up on that offer. And so as I was driving to my appointment this morning, I was thinking about, what am I going to share with them? You know, what's really important to know about my life that has affected my body, so that when he adjusts me, he has a better understanding of what's really happening and how it happened. So, you know, just going back in time, I think I've always been an addict. Since I was born, I've had the alcoholic tendencies, the obsession of the mind. The allergy of the body, I think, has been in many different substances, not just alcohol. And my first addiction was food. And my father is, I believe he's an alcoholic. His father was an alcoholic. His grandfather was alcoholic. And I'm learning that it also runs on my mom's side of the family as well. So I've always been warned that addiction runs in my family. And even though my dad doesn't consume any kind of substance or alcohol or drug, he does eat alcoholically. And so, me being the first child, I'm a daddy's girl, I immediately started eating alcoholically pretty much as soon as I was out of the womb. So that's always kind of been there. I've always just consumed beyond my means. And like I mentioned before, it's hopped from one thing to another. And so, you know, I was thinking about, you know, well, why am I an addict? You know, there's no reason, but there are things that maybe kind of contribute to it. And I was thinking about these things this morning. And part of the reason is that I've just never truly identified with myself. You know, my given name is Nicole. My middle name is Diane. I gave myself the name Christina at one point. And none of these people really truly felt like me. And then a couple years ago, I had just finished grad school, and I did my master's is in early childhood education, so development. And as part of my thesis, I did a lot of research about, you know, just identity and what it means to have an identity. And therefore, as a result of all these different experiences, I came to the conclusion that I am Nicole, I am Diane, and I am Christina, NDK. And so thus was born the name NDK, which encompasses all three of these people. And so, you know, that I think was a big part of why I used. I didn't really know who I was. I didn't really know how to fit in with people. I didn't really have any, or I didn't recognize my talents or my gifts or, you know, my strengths. And so, you know, I got along with everybody. I could be friendly with everybody, but I didn't know how to be with people. I didn't know how to hang out with people. I didn't know how to make conversation. I didn't know how to just be present in the moment. And for a long time, that was, you know, I think that's what kind of started the use, is like when I use, I could just be, and it doesn't matter what happens. I'm just there, and I'm not there really. And so, you know, I think that is a huge part of my story, and understanding that that's part of my story and accepting that that's part of my story has brought me a long ways. Other things that contribute to my story. So when I was 18, I experienced a traumatic experience, which really sent my addiction just downhill pretty quickly. A few years later, I decided that I'm not right-handed, I'm left-handed. So I switched everything, and that was kind of traumatic in itself, because not only did my body have to rearrange, my brain had to rearrange on top of that. And then in addition, I was also just deep in my addiction. And so like everything was just kind of jumbled and all over the place. And this lasted at least 10 years, if not more. And so, you know, I think there was a lot of teasing apart different experiences, different things at the very beginning. And I believe that rehab was what allowed me to have a safe space to do all that. And I was guided through that experience. I was supported. I was around other people who were sober and knew how to be sober. And you know, that's a big part of my story. So just to go back a little bit, because I've got some time, excuse me. So like I mentioned before, I just never really knew who I was. And I just kind of molded to fit what I thought people expected of me. And this morning when I was reflecting on, you know, my life and just what could be important to tell my chiropractor, even after my adjustment, I was thinking about, you know, all these different experiences. And I thought I was really boring. I was like, I don't really have a lot of, you know, experiences. You know, I just would drink to pass out, or use to pass out, use to avoid responsibility. But when I really think back, like there were different stages of my disease and they appeared at different times. So when I was 18 was kind of when things got kickstarted and my life looked one way. And, you know, I discounted that for a long time, but I realized that that's kind of where it all started. And acknowledging that that's where it started has helped me heal through that part. And so I'm not going to go super into when I was 18, but like, as I was reflecting back, I was like, there's been times that I've not been invited to parties because I was the girl who was going to be too drunk and too crazy and too wild. There have been times where I've like passed out and didn't really know where I was in the morning. There have been times that I have just not cared about my well-being at all. Towards the very end, I had this mindset of like, if I die, I die. Doesn't really matter. And that to me is so sad, just to not value my life at all. You know, was kind of, you know, looking back, it's kind of an eye opener. And, you know, it's Halloween today. And so I think one of the biggest things was Halloween of 2016. I met this guy, I let him live with me for a while, and I made some really bad decisions during this time period, and it all started on January 31st, I mean January 31st, October 31st, and, you know, it just, it was basically the mindset of, like, fuck it, whatever happens, happens, I don't care, and so... You know, that just really, I think at the very end, that scared me. Looking back on it, it's just so scary. And so today, I'm so thankful to be where I am. I feel like I can be with people and feel comfortable around them and feel like I'm meant to be there. And know that it's okay that I don't have to say anything or don't have to be anything or don't have to do anything. I can just be. And that is such a beautiful thing for me today. So I want to just talk about what it's like today, I guess, mostly for my share, because I don't want to do a huge drunkalogue. But, you know, I acknowledge that I'm here for a reason. You know, I didn't end up here by accident. And I think the last thing I'll say as a qualifier is, like, when I first got here, so my drug of choice at the very end was marijuana, but I used it alcoholically. First thing when I woke up, all throughout the day, went to sleep high, and did the same thing day after day after day after day. And so when I came here, I didn't know that I really belonged. I was like, am I supposed to really be here? You know, do I fit in? You know, I heard my story a little bit, ins and outs. But because it was a different substance, I was like, I don't know if I'm supposed to be here. But I've learned that it's not what you use. It's how you use it and why you use. And so... You know, for several reasons that I've listed before, I was in the right place. And I'm so glad that I was able to find these words. And so what it's like for me today, you know, I have a sponsor. When I first came to AA back in January of 2017, up until probably June of 2018, I was pretty much a newcomer. And throughout that time, I had about 8 different sponsors. And so after I went through a treatment and got out of treatment, I was like, hey, I need to like choose the right sponsor. I just need to be consistent and work all of the steps and just do the work. And I'm so grateful that I found a sponsor who doesn't tell me what I want to hear. She's honest with me and just straightforward. She will just make sure that I'm doing my work. She doesn't force me to do my work, you know. She's just, she recognizes that I have to be the one to do the work, but she encourages me and tells me, you know, the benefits of doing the work, you know, attraction rather than promotion. And you know, I finally got through all 12 steps, and it was one of the most amazing experiences that I've ever had. And so the way that I relate my spiritual awakening as a result of these steps, you know, this spiritual awakening will move you forward. So for me, actually, I'm going to read this to you because for some reason, I just haven't been able to memorize it, but this, like, summarizes my my experience with the 12 steps. So this is the St. Francis prayer, and this has been just, like, beautiful for me. So the St. Francis prayer goes, God, make me a channel of thy peace, that where there is hatred, may I bring love. Where there is wrong, may I bring the spirit of forgiveness. Where there is discord, may I bring harmony. Where there is error, may I bring truth. Where there is doubt, may I bring faith. Where there is despair, may I bring hope. Where there are shadows, may I bring light. Where there is sadness, may I bring joy. God, grant that I may seek to comfort rather than be comforted, to understand rather than be understood, to love rather than be loved. For it is by self-forgetting that one finds, it is by forgiving that one is forgiven, and it is by dying that one awakens to eternal life. Amen. And so when I first came into AA, I knew that there was like this light in the dark and these choices that I could make, and they were like positive choices or negative choices. That part I got down. Like, I think that's part of the reason why this prayer resonated with me, because it's like, yes, I have a choice, and I can be here, or, you know, I can, you know, make good choices or make bad choices, poor choices. So I understood that. But as the result of the steps, I was finally able to get to the point to where I could actually get out of myself and start understanding other people. I understood myself enough now that I went through the steps that I could actually forget about myself and worry about somebody else. I was able to love myself enough that I didn't need love from other people. So therefore, I could set the self aside and I could love other people instead of myself. And, you know, through the 12 steps, you learn how that forgiveness isn't for the other person, it's for yourself. The fact that I'm able to forgive you for any harm that I deem that you've done to me, you know, I forgive you because I also see my part in it. So it's like, I can't be mad at you because then I'll be mad at myself. And so, you know, as a result of these steps, I finally felt at home in my own skin. I understood who I was, where I was going, and that's a reward for me in itself. So I encourage, I hope that everybody gets to experience that. So I finally got through the 12 steps, and then I think I got through the 12 steps right around May of this year. And then I was in the middle of COVID. And so my program was kind of like wiggly woggly through COVID. I would go to weeks every day, some weeks, and then some other weeks I would go just a couple days a week. And I was really on it or really off of it. And it just kind of flip-flopped for a little while. And then I started getting kind of consistent. And I felt like, okay, now I'm consistent. I've got kind of a routine going. I'm feeling good. But I feel like there's something more that I could be doing. I couldn't quite put my finger on it. I was like, okay, I'm going to go to my meetings. I'm going to share, you know, I'll raise my hand. I'll, you know, I'm going to also go to a step study meeting and start, you know, a big book meeting and start making sure that I'm reading the book. And you know, I was doing all these things, but I felt like there was something more that I could do. And then I get this text one day, and it's like, hey, this newcomer is looking for a sponsor. Is it okay if I share your information? I was like, yes, please share my information. And, you know, we got in contact. She's been doing the work. And every single time that she calls, it just makes me feel so great. And I feel like that was the missing piece, was like being able to give away what was so freely given to me. And so, you know, I wouldn't really classify myself as a shy person. I feel like I can be reserved, but I'm a pretty good talker, and I feel really blessed because my sponsee is a talker also, so we can communicate, and she listens to what I have to say, and I listen to what she has to say, and it's this really awesome dynamic relationship, and I'm so grateful. And, you know, she'll mention, like, I really appreciate what you shared with me, or that advice makes so much sense, or like, thank you so much for giving me your time. And I mean, I won't mislead you, and I'm not going to say that all sponsees or all people are like that, but you know, just being appreciated feels so good, in addition to being able to share the wisdom that I've learned as well. And I'd say most of the time, when I'm giving her advice, it's something that I myself have to hear as well. And so it's a nice reminder for me, you know, that this works. You've got to do the work. Nobody else can do the work for you. That you, you know, get what you put into it. So if you just half-ass it, you're just going to get half-ass results. And, you know, it's been such a blessing. And so, you know, a big part of our relationship, and I feel should be a big part of a sponsor-sponsee relationship, is this idea of a higher power. And when I first arrived to the rooms, I had given up on a higher power. As a child, I had gone to a private Christian school. A lot of my family was Christian. And so I kind of had this concept of God instilled in me at a very young age. But being in a private school, you know, kind of being in and out of church, you see a lot of people say one thing in church and then do a completely different thing outside of church. And that hypocrisy sort of led me astray. And I really wanted nothing to do with that. So when I came into the rooms, I was like, I don't really know about this concept of a higher power or God or, you know, whatever it is that we're calling it. And it was kind of hard for me to develop my own sense of a higher power, because I had this idea just like in the back of my mind that I couldn't let go of. And it took me a while to really unlearn what had been taught to me and relearn what really worked for me. And at the beginning, people were like, oh, you know, God is love. Your higher power is love. Just let it be love. And I was like, I have no idea what love is. You know, even though my parents loved me unconditionally, they didn't love me in the way that I thought I needed to be loved. So I felt unloved most of my life. And so when people were like, well, just pick love, pick love. I was like, I don't even know what love is. And that was a really hard concept for me to get. But I think it was when I had, so one of my eight sponsors that I had at the very beginning, she took me, I remember this distinctly, she took me to the lake, I can't remember what the lake is called, Lake Merritt. And we just sat by the lake, and she was like, let go of everything that you've ever been told and just close your eyes and feel like this energy is giving you a big hug and it cares about you and wants the best thing for you, and whatever you do, it wants to do too, and it will support you. And I think that's the moment that I started to believe. I started to have faith that something else was out there, that something better could be waiting for me. But it wasn't until a few years later that, you know, I had to kind of like figure out what that really meant for me. But, you know, I think it's the second step that says you came to believe. Well, that was the moment I came to believe. So now I'm turning my will and my life over to this higher power, this something bigger than myself that could help me move forward, give me something better. And after starting to believe a little bit, I was able to just build on that and build on that and build on that. And one of the things that, one of the concepts that was instilled in me in treatment was this concept of blind faith. Knowing that there's something better out there that many people are living proof that it works, and just having faith that it'll work for you too. I think that's, in doing that, I believe that I started to just let this concept or let good things happen to me and not constantly be putting up this wall and blocking myself from moving forward. And so these days, you know, my concept of a higher power is not like a man in the sky. It's not whatever that was instilled in me from the start. But I believe that, you know, energy is the source of everything that, I was going to say on Earth, but even it's in the universe and just everywhere. And so, you know, that concept, to make it more real, I was like, okay, well, water is energy. Okay, let's just, you know, pray to water. I can drink water. I can be around water. I can take showers, or I can go to the ocean. So water. And then slowly that just kind of transformed into like something bigger and different. And now I can say that I know that I know that I know that something else exists, something's connecting all of us. And I'll sometimes refer to it as God just because it's a concept that everybody knows what I'm talking about. But what I love is that my concept of God looks different than your concept of a higher power of God. And it works for us in different ways. But whatever way works for you is what works for you. And so when I started working with my sponsor and we started talking about this, you know, she started conceptualizing her sense of a higher power, which also solidified and furthered my understanding of a higher power. And it just builds on each other and it grows. And I know that something's out there, but she's putting words to it and I'm putting words to it. And we're able to articulate what it is that we're feeling or are experiencing. And I think that exchange is so powerful in itself because, you know, this is a spiritual program. And when you're able to connect with other people about just their sense of spirituality, or, you know, they can relate to what you're experiencing and it grows into something different for them, it's so beautiful to watch. And, you know, through this program, I've come to understand that religion and spirituality are separate. You know, spirituality is like just believing that there's something else out there or there's good things can happen. And religion is just, to me, how you practice. So like for me, I guess my religion is like I meditate and I'll pray and I'll, you know, do, you know, deep breathing exercises or whatever. And that's okay. That, you know, that works for me and something different will work for you. But, you know, I think when I first came to the rooms and I saw people smiling and living and just knowing that life can be good, I wanted that. And I can honestly say today that I have that and I believe that. And it's because I put in the work. I took the actions. I put in the work. I, you know, tried on different things. You know, I think one of the big concepts for me, so my background is now education, and I understand that different people learn differently. And so there's many different ways of doing things. And you don't figure out what works for you until you try different things. And so in this program, I've just tried so many different things and I've kept an open mind and I just trusted that something will fall into place for me. And that willingness to just experiment or try out what was working for somebody else and taking what worked for me and then leaving the rest. And I think I'll end with this is like a philosophy. I don't know if it's a philosophy or a quote or I don't know what to call it, but something that has been pushing me forward for many, many years probably since grad school, is I believe it was by Thomas Edison. I'm not 100% sure, but there was a quote out there that said, how do you get so successful? Somebody asked Thomas Edison, how do you become so successful? And his response was, well, I failed. I failed and I failed and I failed until I was all out of failures, but there was nothing left to do but succeed. And that's how I approached this program. I just keep trying, keep trying, keep trying until I figure out what works. And then I keep going from there. And that's kind of, you know, this mindset of like, it's not the fact that you fall down. It's not about falling down. It's about getting back up. And so, like I said earlier on in my share, you know, I was a newcomer for about 18 months, but I kept getting back up. And I think that's like the most critical thing for me. And I think it might be critical for other people, but you know, it doesn't matter if you fall down, it matters that you get back up and keep going. So with that, I will end my share and thank you all for being here.